I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
We are diving back into the direct-to-video Disney animated sequels with Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time, a princess movie with time travel. The best way to describe this movie is this is the Back to the Future 2 of Disney princess movies.
Now, I haven't seen Cinderella 2. Is this going to be a problem? Will I be able to follow this complex plot?
The less said about Cinderella 2, the better. Cinderella 2, Dreams Come True, was the bad part of the Disney animated sequels. It was 3 episodes of a TV show that never got picked up. Like Atlantis 2, Milo's Return, 3 episodes of a TV show that never got picked up. Quite a number of the Disney animated sequels kind of fall under that umbrella.
Speaking of which, I look forward to Moana 2.
Oh, I knew you were going there. But the only thing about Cinderella 2 that's even canon to this, in Cinderella 2, there one of the segments slash episodes is Anastasia falling in love with a baker. And we see that baker in the end credits of Cinderella 3. That's it. I mean, that's really all you need to know about Cinderella 2.
Is a complete retcon. Not only, I mean, spoiler alert, but not only of Cinderella 2, but of actual Cinderella.
Yeah, that's why I kind of say it's the Back to the Future 2, because we go back into the events of the original movie and we alter the events of that movie.
And it is never unaltered.
No, it's not.
So apparently, according to Disney, Cinderella no longer happened the way it happened.
Disney tends to ignore the direct-to-video sequels.
Yeah.
But
shut up. It's our podcast and we can say whatever we want to.
Yeah. But honestly, it's the most creative thing that you could do with Cinderella. At least up to this point. Is take the events of the story and just imagine Cinderella, where the wicked stepmother knows everything that's going to happen and does everything she can to change the outcome and wins.
Yeah, I mean, the entire premise of this is, what if the stepmother and the stepsisters discovered, oh, Cinderella got her prince by way of magic.
And if she can get the prince by magic, then so can we. You know, for a movie called Cinderella 3, this is Anastasia's movie. This is the Wicked Stepsisters movie. We get a character arc for the freaking stepsister.
Which I'm kind of here for. Although, it is very weird to have the Wicked Stepsister just walking around sounding like Dot Warner.
Yeah. Well, since you mentioned it, let's just talk about this cast, because it is a direct-to-video Disney sequel. We don't do the stunt casting, at least not in this one. Some of them have stunt casting, but this one does not. As we have an all-star cast of some of the best voice actors that's ever worked in animation. As you mentioned, Tress MacNeille, Dot Warner herself, as Anastasia. Jennifer Hale as Cinderella, C.D. Barnes as the prince. Russi Taylor, Minnie Mouse herself, rest in peace, as Drizella and the Fairy Godmother. We have Rob Paulsen, Yakko Warner, Pinky, Raphael, as both the Grand Duke and Jacques, Corey Burton, as Gus, and as Lucifer, both the cat and, spoiler alert, the human, Frank Welker.
Frank Welker, he is your childhood.
So yeah, there's a point where they turn Lucifer into a human for a small bit.
It's like 3 or 4 minutes. But
I gotta say, Frank Welker going from his cat voice into his regular voice in a very painfully sounding way, amazingly talented.
Yeah, I will say they did one weird bit of stunt casting. And that is, for no reason I can figure out, Holland Taylor is in this movie. And I'm like, the hell? Because she is, I mean, no offense to this movie and no offense to the other actors in this movie, but they are, you know, workaday voice actors. This is their bread and butter. And then all of a sudden we've got Holland Taylor in here, who is kind of known for being, you know, an on-screen, you know, Emmy award-winning actress. And she is in here as, like, the tiniest bit part of the woman who is in charge of all the servants in the castle.
She's playing the type.
I mean, it's just so weird because, you know, if you're familiar with her body of work, you're like, one, you immediately recognize her voice, and then two, you're like, what are you doing in here? But the thing is that apparently she was also in Cinderella 2.
Same character, yeah.
And so it was like, okay.
If the Cinderella TV show had gone to series, she would have been part of that series.
I mean, she has done voice acting, you know, it's not that she hasn't.
But she's more well known as a screen actor versus a voice actor.
Yeah, I mean, she did like American Dad and stuff like that, but you know, you're like, she was on The Practice and stuff, like, you know, it's like, this voice cast just rocks, because it's a bunch of, you know, good standbys, and Tress MacNeille just blows it out of the water as Anastasia, even though it is kind of her Dot Warner voice, but she really gets that pathos in there, you know?
Even when she has her I Want song. Yes, Anastasia has an I Want song. She wants someone to love her.
For her.
For her. Not because she's a daughter of a lady, of a landowner in Lady Tremaine. Not because of anything else, you know, just because she is who she is.
Not because the slipper fits her.
No.
Not because they used magic to, you know, wipe the prince's memory. Not, you know.
When your character is known throughout the universe as the ugly stepsister, and your wish is to be loved for who you are, that is amazing. I'm kudos to Disney for doing this in a direct-to-video sequel. Like, this is something you would see, no offense, but this is something you would kind of see in a Shrek sequel.
Yeah,
but played for laughs in a Shrek sequel, but it's played seriously here. And yeah, I mean, she just wants someone to love her for her, for herself, and not for anything else. And Lady Tremaine, obviously, is, you know, I feel like, I mean, how many times have we talked about, we've talked about this before when we talked about the other Cinderella movies. It's just, the stepmother is just, what the hell does love have to do with marriage? And, hey, it's all about our social standing, and it's about the money we're going to get by being married to the prince and blah, blah, blah. You should be satisfied with that. but it's a character growth moment for Anastasia. And it shows that she's not like her mother.
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, the other sister, Drizella, she's very much like her mother.
Yeah.
She's very much like, you know, it should be me. I should be the one conning the prince. You know, it's like, I don't care what we do. I'm okay with status and, you know.
Yeah, she's just mini Tremaine. And she does tend to scoff at Anastasia's want to just be loved for herself. And it's, yeah, very much under the thumb of her mother, and very much agrees with everything her mother says. Sequels that tend to reuse the same villain do tend to fall under a lot of tropes that this movie seems to not do. Yes, it's the same villains as the original movie with the same motivations, but it's done in such a way that it's kind of creative. And I got to get, I said it last week that this is considered one of, if not the best, of the Disney animated direct-to-video sequels. And I stand by that. Because this one is very creative in how they're doing a sequel, and like I said, giving Anastasia this character growth. And like I said, Anastasia has her little "I Want" song. She sees Cinderella and the prince going into the forest. She follows them, and then she is the one that realizes, "Oh, Cinderella got the prince with magic. She has a fairy godmother."
Who is throwing Cinderella and the prince their first anniversary party.
Yeah, the beginning of this movie takes place 1 year after the events of the original film. And Anastasia steals the fairy godmother's magic wand. She doesn't steal it, but the fairy godmother drops it and she picks it up and runs. So she steals it. Goes to her mother, "Hey, Cinderella got the prince by magic. I have a magic wand. Let's use it." And they're kind of skeptical. "Yeah, sure. Magic wands. Sure. I think you spend too much time cleaning up in the kitchen here. You know. But then the fairy godmother comes to Lady Tremaine and the stepsisters. "Hey, give me my wand back. You don't know what that can do." And for lack of a better term, Anastasia accidentally kills the fairy godmother.
Well, not kills, but she temporarily turns her into a statue.
Disney kills.
Yeah.
And she's guilty over it. Like, "Oh no, I hurt the grandma." Like, again, it's part of that growth that Anastasia has. Like, she is showing remorse for her actions. It was an accident. But like, "Oh no, what did I do? I. Because from Anastasia's point of view, she wants her happily ever after too. If you could give Cinderella her happily ever after, why not me? Why Cinderella and not me? But it shows that, yes, she wants her happily ever after, but she doesn't want to do horrible, terrible things to get it. Like, you know, turning the fairy godmother into a statue. But Tremaine is all about this. "Oh, we have magic now." And she goes automatically full into the dark arts. "I am going to summon all of the dark forces of the universe."
Yeah, I gotta hand it to Lady Tremaine. This was my favorite part of the movie, I think. Because, you know, Anastasia gets a hold of the wand, and she's like, "I'll prove to you it works." And she's like, "I gotta remember
the magic words.
The magic words." And she tries a few combinations, and then she remembers, like, "Oh, it's bibbidi-bobbidi-boo." And She accidentally turns Lucifer into like a swan with a cat's head. And then she accidentally turns the fairy godmother into a statue. And Lady Tremaine is like, oh, no, that's actual magic. Okay, I thought you were a liar because I hate my children. Give me that wand. And then immediately. She's like, I call upon all the dark forces of the universe to do my bid. And I was like, okay, you went from 0 to 1,000 real damn quick there, honey. Can you just try to like, I don't know, animate a teapot or something for just a second to make sure you got how this works
She
before
went
you
full
start.
Maleficent.
Yeah, she starts summoning Cthulhu in the middle of this thing as her first spell. And I'm like, no. Dial it back a bit. Make sure you got how this works before you start summoning all the dark powers of the universe. Also, I love that when the fairy godmother uses it, or like when Anastasia uses it, the magic comes out like light blue. And the second Lady Tremaine gets her hands on it, every villain is lime.
Yup.
There you go. It's the Disney particular shade of green that we get for every villain. I laughed so hard when I saw that. I was like, of course, the second she gets her hand on the magic wand, all the magic turns that shade of green.
I mean, it's a show that Anastasia is not that evil. She's just a little misguided. And I love that we actually see them reanimate scenes from the first Cinderella, but splitting up her and the prince. Like you see the carriage from the end of the movie, and they're being split, they're being pulled apart. You see the ball, and Cinderella is just thrown off the stairs before she can even lose the slipper. Like you see the them putting the slipper on, and it's just getting blown away. Like she is undoing time itself. And again,
Yeah.
kudos to them for reanimating all of those scenes.
And the thing is that they end up right back where the Duke is coming in with the slipper to test it on all the women in the house. Except this time, Lady Tremaine uses the wand to enlarge the slipper to fit Anastasia's foot.
It's never said why it's Anastasia. She just happened to be the first woman in the house that they put the shoe on.
Yeah, I don't really know why she does it for Anastasia either, except for, the plot needs to happen and we need Anastasia to like learn a lesson or whatever. But from Lady Tremaine's point of view, why wouldn't you give it to like Drizella? Because she's the one that's more with you.
Or give it to herself.
Well,
Tremaine
the
is
thing
definitely.
is that the I think the magic would have had to stretch a little bit more, where it's like, oh. Here is this matron woman past menopause wanting to marry the prince. Like, that's not going to fly.
There's limitations even to the fairy godmother's magic.
Yeah, I mean, you need somebody young enough to like produce an heir, like, so. But why wouldn't you give it to the. Why wouldn't you give it to the daughter that is of a same mind as you? She's totally down with the con, and she can keep it together a little bit better because we see as soon as the shoe fits for Anastasia, she like completely loses her mind, like, I'm gonna marry a prince, And why wouldn't you give it to the one that like can like keep her stuff together,
with the exception of like the one slip up at the midpoint of the movie. Go away, Cinderella, we won.
Yeah, and it's like that seems slightly out of character for her, but again, the plot has to happen.
And after all of this, you know, they put the slipper on her and all of that. Cinderella finally gets herself out of that room she was locked in, just like in the original film, makes her way down the stairs with the other slipper. And Lady Tremaine just is. It is pure evil how she says it. And I love how it's done. It's like she takes the slipper and says, I don't know what you think happened last night, but it was all a dream, and drops the shoe, the glass slipper, onto the floor, and it shatters. Oh, by the way, Cinderella, clean up that broken glass. Like, ugh. Magic has somehow made this character even more evil, and she was pretty evil in the original.
Yeah.
Again, I will say one thing. The songs, because this is a Disney animated musical, songs did not thrill me that well. They're very also, like, it felt like this movie had songs because we needed songs because it's a Disney animated movie. I don't know how you
felt. I felt the same way because the songs are quite samey. Anastasia has her I Want song, and then Cinderella has her, like, I Wanted, but It Didn't Work Out song, which is kind of weird. And then they repeat the Cinderella depressing song multiple times.
The only one that felt kind of fun was the mice doing the song that recapped the first movie.
I like the mice song, and that one ends really good because the prince even comes back and goes, like, thanks for the song. And I was like, yeah, the prince knows what's up.
This is a classic Disney princess becoming a modern Disney princess, because Cinderella is more proactive in this story than she was in her original story. Now, granted, modern interpretations of Cinderella from the last 30 years have tried to implement that as well, making her a little bit more proactive, making her a little bit more active in her own story rather than, I'm going to go to the ball. Oh no, my sisters and my mother make me not go. Fairy godmother, please help me. To, you know what? I'm going to go to that castle. I'm going to look that prince in the eye and say, it was me you danced with, you dummy. And then he'll remember me. So in a way, like I said, it is more of a classic Disney princess becoming the more proactive modern Disney princess. And it shows that Cinderella is a lot smarter than anyone gives her credit for. Like, she goes there. She's already dressed like a servant. So she just goes into the castle as a servant.
Yeah, I did like that part of the movie because she goes up to the front gate and then she's like, you know, it'd probably be smarter to just go in the servant's entrance. And that's what she does. And it works out for her.
Yeah, she has the mice with her, and she says that she's the royal mouse catcher. And she lets Gus and Jock out, and they start causing havoc in the castle, and now says, okay, you're the royal mouse catcher, catch some mice. Which is a nice, smart move from the three of them. But it gives Jock and Gus free reign to just go crazy in the castle, which is fun. It's again, it just allows these two to just do whatever they want, and I actually did find that a little bit funny. Having those two be the only mice in the movie helps versus the dozen mice and birds from the original film, because it gives them more to do and actually has them have a bit of character.
Yeah, they were the two main mice in the original film as well. So, And I don't mind cutting out the girl mice, because all the main characters in this movie are women anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't really feel like it's lost the gender balance. It's like you've got Cinderella, you've got Lady Tremaine, you've got the stepsisters, you've got Holland Taylor's character, you got, you know. It's like there's plenty of women in this movie. And I think the birds are supposed to be girls too, so.
And another wrinkle is we, for the first time, we see what the queen looks like. We get, what the king's wife, the queen, looked like. There's this great moment between Prince Charming and the king where they are having this discussion. And the king has one of the best lines in the movie. Kiki, I'll let you say it because when you texted me that line, oh, she's at that part of the movie.
When the prince comes in and he's like, "I have found the woman I'm going to marry, and I'm going to marry her tonight." And the king's like, "Oh, great! You really should have been married before now. Like, let's chop chop. Let's get it going." And he's like, "How did you find her?" And he's like, "Well, she fit a glass slipper." And the king goes, "No, breeding, refinement, these are reasons to marry someone, not their choice in transparent footwear."
And I like that it gives that bit of character to the king, and it also a bit of character to the prince, because it's, most people think, oh, he only married her because she fit the shoe, but he says no, it's like I danced with her, I talked to her, I looked her in her eyes, I felt something when I held her hand. It's just the shoe was all I had to go with. And there's this great moment in that scene with the prince and the king talking about, well, how was it when you met mom? And you see the painting of the king and the queen together. The queen, I don't know if it was intentional, but they made the queen look like Anastasia with Cinderella's face.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
And the king has this great moment with the prince of, and they're looking at this picture of the queen, and he goes, "The stars shone brighter on that day, the day I met your mother, than any day ever." And the prince says, "That's how I felt when I met that girl at the ball." So it's giving that bit of character growth to the king, to the prince, because the prince kind of had no character whatsoever in the original movie. Sorry, he did not. And I mean the original Disney movie, for those of you who are wondering.
Yeah. Prince Charming had very little character.
But giving him a lot of character here, and I love that. It shows that there's more to him than just, I'm going to marry pretty girl who fits shoe. He shared a moment with Cinderella, and he, in that moment, knew it was meant to be, because he says that to his father, and his father felt the same way. The moment I first held your mother's hand, I knew she was the one. And Prince Charming also says, yes, the moment I held that girl's hand, I knew she was the one. And hand-holding becomes the thread of the rest of the movie. Because Prince Charming tries to hold Anastasia's hand at various points in the movie and feels nothing. There's no spark, there's no drive, there's no emotional response, there's nothing there. But when he crossed paths with Cinderella while she's roaming through the castle, when they finally get their moment together after her exile, they touch hands and that spark is there. You already mentioned it. Lady Tremaine uses magic to wipe the prince's memory of Cinderella completely, to that he believes that it was Anastasia he danced with at the ball. So he has no memory of Cinderella whatsoever. But this, in typical Disney fashion, it's the true love conquers all method of those two holding hands. And he gets that feeling again, and all of the memories of Cinderella rush back to him. corny, yes, cheesy, yes, but I actually liked it.
Yeah, I mean, one, this is a movie for very small children, so you can't really talk about anything deeper, you know, or more adult. So they kind of use, like, oh, the moment I touched her hand, I knew, you know. It's kind of a stand-in for a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more a stand-in for kind of deeper emotions that you can't really talk about a lot as
when you're dealing with children. In a G-rated kids movie.
Well, I mean, it's not even that G-rated, it's just age-appropriate. You know, children are still trying to get a hold of, am I angry or am I hungry at that age? Mm-hmm. You know? So, that's what I'm talking about. Not necessarily anything kind of, you know, lewd. But it's just, when you're talking about kind of complex interpersonal feelings, you can't really dive too deep in a movie like this. So it's like, oh, I touched her hand and there was this magic spark, you know.
And they all but say it. Anastasia gets part of it out at part of the movie. One of the main messages of the movie is love is stronger than magic. Like, they can wipe the prince's memory all they want, but whatever love he feels, the feeling he has when he met Cinderella, the feeling he had looking into her eyes, dancing with her, holding her hand, talking to her, is stronger than whatever magic they could use to take that away from him. Again, cheesy, yes, but it works in this movie.
Yeah, I did kind of like that when Anastasia was, the magic is not as strong as there, you know, and she's about to say love and Lady Tremaine is like, shut up and do not finish that sentence.
I will give them one other thing that I did not notice until I did a rewatch for this movie is, they sort of keep the rotoscoping style animation of the original film. Like, the characters are animated in a pseudo rotoscopy way. And I like that because it's kind of how the original human characters were animated back in the day. They would film actors acting out the movie. And then they would, in some cases, draw based on what they saw. But in other cases, just drew over whatever they filmed. And I kind of like that they kind of kept that. But it's, you know, obviously not true rotoscope in this movie. The human characters, especially Cinderella, move in a very rotoscopy way, which I kind of like. Because it is kind of trying to make it look as much as they can to the original film. Giving these characters more character and motivation versus the original film is a big plus for me as well. Especially, like I said, especially the prince and especially the king. Because it's more than just a shoe. It's, you know, we had this moment and I want that, you know, she's the one and all of that.
And I really like the king trying to connect with Anastasia. Like, he really isn't on board with his son trying to marry a girl based on a shoe. But he's like, all right, you know, you think there's something there. So he genuinely tries to be like, well, okay, if you're going to be my daughter-in-law, let's see what you two have in common, what you're like as a person, what you're, you know, he's genuinely trying. Which I kind of like.
He even takes this moment with her because Anastasia thinks that the king is mad at her because they have this practice dance. Anastasia and Prince Charming have this practice dance before their wedding, and she's stepping on her feet. She's stepping on his feet. And she thinks that the king is angry at him for it and says, no, 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 I want to have this conversation with you. The day I married the queen, she stepped on my feet too. And apparently there's this 12-foot tall painting of the queen stepping on the king's foot. Which I love that the king actually had this picture made, this painting made, to commemorate that moment. But, like, you know, my wife wasn't perfect and neither are you, but that's okay. As long as you love my son, I'll love you as my daughter. And I want to trust you with my prized possession. And you think it's going to be this wonderful jewel or this expensive trinket. And it's a seashell. It's a small seashell. And he says, I got this seashell the day I met the queen. We were both on the beach. We both reached for it. Our hands touched. And that was the moment I knew she was the one. And I've kept the seashell ever since as a reminder. And I want you to have it as a reminder to yourself of the love that you have with my son. So like you said, he is not 100% on board with marrying a girl based off a shoe size, but he understands that love can come from anywhere in any situation, and he wants to at least try to accept Anastasia as his future daughter-in-law. And it's a great tender moment with the king. And for Anastasia, it's this great moment because for the first time in her life, someone talked to her like she was a person. Someone treated her with respect. And as she would say to her, to Lady Tremaine, he treated me like I was his own daughter. So it's for the first time in her life, she felt the love of a parent. Which is sad considering her life with her sister and mother. But it's part of Anastasia's growth as a person.
Yeah, it's really kind of sad that she was like, I want somebody to love me for me. And you think that the entire time she's talking about romantic love, but she's just kind of talking about any kind of love. Because she's never had, like, parental love of that sort. She's never had romantic love. She's never had that kind of love from a sibling. Which is kind of sad because Cinderella would have given her that love.
Yeah.
If she hadn't sided with her mom and her sister against Cinderella.
Yeah. But, yeah, and again, it shows the kind of sad life that these two stepsisters have. But Drizella is just, you know what? Who cares? I want money. I want status. I don't want love. I don't care for love. Who needs it? But yeah, again, the growth they give, the character, the whole arc that Anastasia goes through in this movie, it makes this movie. Like, and you kind of needed that, for lack of a better term, that gimmick. Because if all of the characters acted exactly the same as they were in the original film, it wouldn't have been as good to me.
Yeah, I want to talk about Lucifer for a bit.
All right.
Because he's got some funny parts in this.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned before about him getting turned into, like, a half swan, half cat, which was kind of funny. But one of my other favorite lines in the movie was like Cinderella sends in the mice to go get the magic wand because they know where it's being held now in the palace. And she's like, okay, just stay away from the cat. So, of course, immediately they, like, go near the cat. And in trying to avoid the cat, they accidentally put the cat's tail in the fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
And so Lucifer's tail gets set on fire, and he jumps up and starts running around the room in the palace that they're in. And starts setting other things on fire, and his tail is, like, you know, just a big tuft of flame and all this kind of stuff. And I love that, like, in the background, as all this chaos is going on of this, like, cat running around trying to put out its tail, you hear Lady Tremaine's voice just very calmly go, "Someone put out the cat."
Like, she's completely unfazed of the whole thing.
Yeah. Which, I laughed so hard when I heard that, because I was like, ugh, what a perfect, just, like, no empathy at all. You know, the two sisters are running around, like, jumping on tables, and, you know, because they've spotted the mice, and they're trying to avoid the mice, and then the cat's running around setting things on fire, and they're absolutely terrified and whatever. Lady Tremaine's just like, "Someone put out the cat."
Lucifer goes through so much in this movie. Like when the mice actually end up stealing the wand back, they just zap Lucifer into as many times as they can.
Yeah, and then the poor thing gets turned into a human, which is a fate I would wish on nobody.
So yeah, how that gets set up is that eventually the palace guards catch up. They find Cinderella. Lady Tremaine say, "Hey, this is my old servant. She's stealing from the palace. I want her banished from the land forever." So eventually the Lady Tremaine uses magic to zap Cinderella into a very grotesque looking version of the pumpkin coach. Like, the way they animated it, it looked like, yes, it's a pumpkin, but it also looks like the pumpkin is in physical pain and in how it's transforming. Like, it's not, it's turning into this beautiful white carriage, like in the movie. No, it's like, it's stretching, it's gooey. Like, parts of it is gooing and how its transformation is going. Vines are growing out and grabbing a random horse and torturing it to tame it. Like this is a direct-to-video Disney sequel. It should not have this good animation.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I was rather impressed by the level of animation.
Yeah, and Lady Tremaine just turns Lucifer into a human and said, "Hey, make sure they never come back alive," and he becomes the evil coachman of the evil pumpkin carriage. And like I said, Frank Welker going from his cat voice to essentially his regular voice as this evil coachman version of Lucifer. So yeah, that's Lucifer's whole little thing of just getting transformed into random things throughout this entire movie. But as we mentioned, the mice have their own little song, and they actually get to the prince, and they have their song. They sing their song about summarizing the events of the first movie and telling her, "Hey, the girl you danced was Cinderella, and you need to go find Cinderella before she gets shipped off to who knows where forever." That's enough for the prince to go after her, and because she is the one, she is the girl that he danced with. The prince, and it leads to probably one of the best scenes of the prince in this whole movie, because, like, he tries to tell the king, "Hey, I have that girl that we sent away. She's the girl that I danced with. I know, because the talking mice told me to." And the king is like, oh, wait. First, it's this girl with the glass. First, you're dating, marrying a girl because of a glass slipper. Now you're talking to my son. We're going to get you some help. We'll call the best doctors in the land. We'll get you leeched. You'll be fine. And you are not to go down one more stair. And he looks at his father. He goes, okay. And just jumps out the window. That in itself is more character. That little 5 second scene is more character than the princess had in the entire first movie. So eventually the prince gets to Cinderella. They are he holds hands with her. They have their moment again. All of the memories they had come rushing back to them because magic cannot erase true love, and they are going to get married and later Tremaine and the stepsisters are to be arrested and banished from the kingdom themselves because they are witches who have used magic to brainwash the prince.
You want to know what I like about this movie? Is that there's so much of like, we did a thing, and then like, you get a little pop up that says, no, they didn't do the thing after all. It's like, we erased your brain. Nah, you didn't. It was like, we changed history. Eh, but did you though? It was just little things like that that made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean the Tremaines think that they're winning, but did they win? Did they? So Lady Tremaine has one final trick up her sleeve, is that she uses magic to turn Anastasia to look like Cinderella. Anastasia is going to marry the prince at the wedding, and they're going to get rid of Cinderella. Which maybe you should have done this at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, it's one of those things of like,
This is kind of where we start the retread of the first movie. But I must say, the entire action sequence, yes, we get an action sequence in a Cinderella movie of Cinderella trying to fight out of this demonic pumpkin as it's being carted off by human Lucifer. And again, this movie, a direct-to-video animated Disney sequel, should not have that good animation. Because that entire sequence is animated so well. And it kind of shows, again, it's the culmination of the proactive Cinderella that this movie has. But finally, we get to the wedding. Anastasia still has the shell in her hand, and she can't do it. She cannot go through with the wedding. I'm not Cinderella. I'm not the girl you danced with. She's right there, and there's Cinderella. Like, there's this great moment between Cinderella and Anastasia. Like, is this the kind of person you want to be? And Anastasia just, she reiterates the thought that she's been saying this entire movie. She wants someone to love her for her. And can someone really love her for her when she looks like someone else? So Tremaine has had it. It's like, you are weak. You've always been weak. And I will take care of you once and for all. I will take care of you. I will take care of Cinderella. I'm going to take care of the prince. And goes to zap them and turn them into toads. But the prince gets his sword out, ricochets the spell off his sword back to Tremaine and Frizella, who turn into toads. Though I feel that that was an addition made later because the scene that we see is them disappearing and then the wand fall into the floor. And it feels like, okay, we can't imply that these characters are dead. So we'll just have that they were transported somewhere else and turned into toads. I would have preferred it that they were dead, but But what, you know, is what it is. And I mean, Anastasia has her moment again. You know, she wants to be herself. She wants to be loved for herself. That's her entire thing this entire movie. And now that her sister and her mother are gone, they bring back the fairy godmother. And Anastasia feels like, well, I just tried to usurp the throne using magic. I am no longer worthy of this prized possession you gave me, Your Highness, and I will get my punishment. And the king kind of looks at her, tells her to keep the shell, and says, everyone deserves a second chance, and everyone deserves a chance to be loved. Corny, yes, but we need a happy ending for this movie. Now that the fairy godmother has been brought back, she says, well, if you want, I can fix history. I can put everything as it's supposed to be and send you back to your original lives.
Which I love their reaction to that. They're like, what original lives? Because they have no idea there's been time travel involved. They just know that that Lady Tremaine is messing with magic.
And the fairy godmother said, forget I said anything. We're just going to keep this going the way it is. And I just said, time has been rewritten and doesn't get fixed. But it ends the same, so everything works out in the end. Cinderella and the prince get married, and we have the happy ending. But that's not it, because, again, we get a post-credit scene.
Well, and some post-credits, or during-credits pictures that kind of elaborate on the story. We've already talked about the baker thing, mm-hmm. but... one of my favorite things is that now that the prince understands that the mice are sentient, apparently the mice get, like, court positions.
Yeah, there's several paintings during the ending credits of the mice in various regal attire. And even though they are mice, Gus's clothes are still tight on him, because we need to keep that joke going.
Yeah, I don't know why, like, I mean, if you can sew, or, you know, who knows, that might be, like, fairy godmother magic. Like, you know, if you can make clothing for a mouse that's mostly tailored, shouldn't you be able to make it fully tailored? Come on.
Like, Gus's shirt being too small on him was because that was the only shirt Cinderella had that was mouse-sized. It just happened to be... one size too small for Gus.
Yeah.
And they were just keeping that thing going in this movie.
So weird.
There, a lot of these paintings are also parodies of famous paintings. Like, the one I got off the bat was the Grand Duke in The Scream.
Yeah, and I like that the thing causing the scream is that Lady Tremaine is behind him.
Mm.
Which you might miss it if you're not, you know, paying attention. But on the bridge or the waterfront or, you know, behind the Duke is Lady Tremaine. And I think at least one, if not both, of the sisters. My other kind of favorite one is Cinderella and the Prince in the photo booth.
Yeah, but this is painting, so they actually had to stand there and do these goofy faces as they're getting painted. But yeah, it's...
yeah, painting. It's a photo booth style.
Yeah. And again, it's giving the Prince and Cinderella character. That it's... they, these two people actually do have a connection to each other that's more than you fit the shoe, we danced one night. It's like these two definitely have an emotional connection to each other that is stronger than magic.
And then there is an actual post-credit sequence that has Lady Tremaine and Drizella in Cinderella's cleaning rags, basically, with brooms.
Yeah, we see them back as toads after from the ending of the movie. The magic wears off. They turn back into human, but they're wearing Cinderella's rags, and they both have brooms in their hand, and they're like scared. They throw the brooms like, ah!
Yeah.
I guess you kind of needed that to let the children watching the movie know, oh, they didn't stay toads forever. They're people. But I must say, I have not seen every single direct-to-video Disney sequel. But of the ones that I've seen, like, this is probably one of the best ones. On all of the lists of Disney animated sequel direct-to-video ones, this is usually either near or at the top. And I am very pressed to disagree. It's like, this is good. This was a nice, good follow-up to Cinderella. Amazingly enough, like, a lot of the direct-to-video Disney sequels end up being retreads of the original movie, maybe with a different character, or it feels like the next episode of the series. This one tried something different. This one actually felt original, even though time travel is a trope, but still, it felt original, it felt different, and it gave character to these characters who didn't really have personality, I think is the right word. It gave personality to these characters who did not have a personality, like the prince, like the king. And it gave deeper characterization to Anastasia, even Cinderella. And I really liked it. And it is probably this and maybe Lion King 2, Lion King 1.5 are like, they're up there for me as some of the best of the direct-to-video Disney sequels. I don't know how you felt about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had heard people say that this was pretty good for a Disney sequel, at least. And honestly, I was not expecting much of it, but this is actually kind of cute. Is it going to be on, like, a yearly rewatch for me? Probably not. But, you know, if you've never seen it, I'd say give it a watch. If you've got little ones, give it a watch. If you're curious about it, give it a watch. You know,
I feel like if you had given this a bit of a bigger budget, you could have put this in theaters.
Yeah, probably.
Like I said, this story, this and even the animation was too good for this to be a direct-to-video sequel. Does this movie have the magic? Absolutely.
I'll agree.
So yeah, this is Cinderella 2, you could ignore it. You don't need to watch it. You really don't. It's skippable. But Cinderella 3? Oh, yeah. I definitely, if you haven't seen it, give it a watch. It's less than 90 minutes. It was actually, of the movies we've seen over the last month and a half, this was like the most easiest watch through I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, I'm just, it moves very fast. Like, we are already doing time travel 5 minutes into the movie. Like, this
yeah,
does
it
not.
Yeah, it's not hang around. It's like, all right, you know the story of Cinderella. Let's get to this.
Yeah, we promised you time travel. We're giving you time travel right at the beginning of the movie. And for to take a look at the story of Cinderella from this different perspective, from to redo the ending and give a whole new story around the story that everybody knows, And like I said, taking Cinderella from a classic princess and giving her a more modern, proactive adventure is wonderful. I wish that they had done that for other princesses. I don't know what you could have done with Sleeping Beauty or Snow White, but could you imagine a Sleeping Beauty adventure where she actually does something? You know, that would have been interesting, but for them to do it with Cinderella in this movie was amazing. I recommend it. If you have not seen this movie, do see it. This is, I would be very, you know, it's hard pressed for me to disagree that this is one of the best of the Disney sequels. It probably might be better than Moana 2, who knows?
Well, yeah, we don't know. We haven't seen that one yet, but
probably. It's better than Ralph Breaks the Internet. I'll say it. Cinderella 3 is better than Ralph Breaks the Internet. You're not disagreeing.
I'm gonna keep my thoughts to myself on that one.
Definitely magic. Definitely recommended. Better sequel than it had any right to be. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah.
So let's move on to next week. Next week is going to be a very, very special episode. One of the greatest crossovers in history. And I will leave it at that. And then you, dear listener, can decide for yourself. Guess what we're going to do next week. That's what I'm going to do for you. So come back next week for one of the greatest crossovers of all time. And we will talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here. Join our conversations on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Rewatching the Magic. We are on the X, formerly known as Twitter, at Rewatch the Magic. And new episodes are available every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.
Podcasts are fun.
But there's work to be done.
We encourage you to get involved. Here are some organizations we support.
The American Civil Liberties Union fights for the constitutional rights of all Americans. Find them at ACLU.org.
The National Network of Abortion Funds helps people find access to safe abortion services. Their site is abortionfunds.org.
The Trevor Project provides a 24/7 crisis helpline for LGBTQ youth and education services for schools on LGBTQ issues. They can be found at thetrevorproject.org.
Or find a way to help in your area.